Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we center the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation. These are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast focusing on migrant women in New Zealand. Today, I have another guest with me, who is Sumaira. So welcome, Sumaira.
Thank you, Hafsa. Thank you for having me.
All right. So I guess the first question would be a little bit of an introduction about who you are and where you've come from to New Zealand and what you do.
Sweet. Well, I'm Sumaira Dawood. I describe myself as a South African Kiwi with Indian heritage. It's so funny when people ask you to describe yourself. I think at the core, I am a creative more than anything else. I have a deep interest in writing, in personal development, in photography. Professionally, I work as a program manager and project manager. I've worked in various fields and industries. More personally, I'm a mum of a tween and a teen, and I'm recently divorced.
So tell us a little bit about, I know you, you've said you come from South Africa. So when, how was that transition from South Africa to New Zealand? And what was the first day in New Zealand like? What did it feel like? What did it smell like?
Coming from Africa, and I know it's South Africa is such a unique country in that it doesn't, it's not fully representative of Africa. But it's such a, it feels so vastly different leaving Africa for another continent. And so my first day was back in April 2016. And I came over with my two kids. My partner at the time was already here. And I remember coming through the airport doors and just being struck by this vastness of space. Africa's big, but New Zealand is a different kind of wide open space. It definitely isn't just a spatial thing, it's a feeling thing. So what I mean by that is Africa's busy, it's in flux, there's so much happening, there's energy. You come to New Zealand and there's just the slowness of pace. If I think of how cars physically drive slower, it's like everything went from flux to just the slowness that almost gave me time to digest where I was, you know, from hyper fast pace to just this moderate tempo. I remember being so struck by that. Yeah, on arriving. It's quite a big thing. At the time, like your body has a reaction, your mind has a reaction. It's easier to speed up than it is to slow down. And so it was quite a big jump. It was quite a big jump. The other thing, Hafsa, is that I grew up in South Africa as the last generation that grew up under apartheid, which was a segregated economic system of racial inequity, and we moved into a democratic country. And so I grew up in an unjust time, we moved as a country into a more equitable reality. And there's so much pace, there's so much happening from the time that you're born till the time that you're in your 30s. I was 34, 30, no, 35 when we left. And you come to New Zealand and it's just calm. There's no second agenda, there's no vigilance, there's nothing else that you have to do. You can actually stop. And so it was night and day. I can't actually think of two more opposite places.
Wow, night and day.
Mm.
Interesting. So what was happening in your life before you came to New Zealand? And how did that decision sort of come to being about coming to New Zealand?
I have to be honest, before deciding to move to New Zealand, I probably wouldn't be able to point it out on a map. My partner, ex-partner, gets all the credit. He's always wanted to move to New Zealand from the time that he was quite young. And so it's always been on his bingo card. But having grown up in what I'd probably describe as a coloured slum, in a place full of poverty and gangs and just not a trajectory of success. My dad was a shopkeeper, and so he had a shop there, and I considered that home. And growing up in an environment like that was challenging. It was so challenging, but it's so funny, the human spirit, eh? Like, you have this thing inside you that just drives you to demand more from your life and to carve out what you're actually yearning for. And so I signed up for job shadowing. I signed up for every community program there possibly was to do. And I carved out for myself, firstly, two university degrees that I paid for by myself, holding down three jobs. Like,
Wow.
1 year, I had a tutoring 20 hours a week job. I had a cleaning job at the university creche, the kindy, which was about 15 hours a week. And then I had a Friday, Saturday, Sunday job that paid as well. And that's how I paid for my 4 years. But what I had done was, over time, is I had pushed and pushed and pushed, and I got myself career-wise to a level I was actually proud of. I By the time we left South Africa, I was at a publisher level at an international media publishing house. I think because I come from quite a close, tight-knit Indian family, I had quite strong social connections, lots of friends from school, from uni, from every place I worked, and you just had this full life. At that point when we left, I just had my second child. I think I did a postgrad as well. We were living in a Hasidic neighborhood in Johannesburg. I'm from a different city, and we lived in another place after that. So we finally found like the right mix of things. And then I think probably most notably, I had just finished up a 2 year qualification in life coaching, which was probably one of the most immersive courses I've ever done. It was just intense. And I finished up in Feb 2016, and we left. We were on a plane in the first week of April 2016. And then leaving all of that to come to, at the time, what felt like nothing. Because I didn't have a job to come to. I didn't know a single person. I hadn't visited before I came. I basically took myself out of a known environment where I was thriving into a new place based on, I guess, just a feeling of needing to go there. Not really. Having considered it in a great deal of depth. It's now when I look back, I think it's either foolish or it's an immense sense of trust.
Yeah, and the way you've described Sumaira, the life in South Africa with family and friends and the social connections that you had there. And the word I think you used was full of life, which does lead to my next question then, is around, is there a sense of loss that you feel from where you have come from to here in New Zealand? Or is that a is there a balanced view that you have around what you've lost and what you've gained?
Okay, so I've been here for about almost 9 years. Our citizenship came through about a year and a half ago. And if you asked me that a year and a half ago, I would have said immense loss, not balanced at all. I think the thing that I lost the most is what I would call social wealth. As somebody who values connection, who values companionship. That's just the one thing I struggled to replace, like for like a career you could, even if you had to start out in your career, which is what I had to do, because what I did back in SA didn't exist, you could pivot and you could get yourself back up to a, perhaps not the same level, but at a comfortable, similar level. When it came to social wealth, it was trickier. And as somebody who's very social, who a lot of my thinking comes from interactions, from dialogue, I find that on my own, I can develop my thinking and then I need to sparta with other people, to get different perspectives. And for me, that social wealth is so important on all levels. And so that loss that I felt very acutely was the fact that I chose to come to Christchurch, where it's quite a transient city. People come here, stay a few years, go to Australia, move to Auckland. It's transient. It's rare that people root. It was my experience that the minute I made a friend or I started building my social network, people would leave. And so I did find it personally quite challenging to feel secure with this the community I have, built around myself, the network I had built around myself. And so I think for the first 7 years, I found it very challenging. I found it very frustrating. And I felt, I suppose, sad, just this immense sense of loss of not having weaves of women around me. That's the best way I can think to put it, right? I grew up as one of four daughters. And so I really value female companionship. It's just next level for me, right? It's such a sense of strength. And that I think was probably the most challenging where I sit now, because between those 7 years and now, I got separated. I went through a divorce, which was tricky. And having come out the other side, I feel as if now I have a more balanced view. I've rechosen Christchurch as my home. And I've done so in an individual capacity. And with that, I think it's given me confidence and strength to stand on my own 2 feet. And while I still want to build my social wealth, I don't need it as desperately. So I can see what I've lost, but I can also see now I can see what I've gained. What New Zealand or what immigrating has given me is it's almost as if that vast open space has allowed me to pour out all the intersectional bits of myself. Imagine taking eight tubs of paint, different colors, and you're pouring all of that out. And I've placed it now, I've contained all the paint onto one canvas. And I can see it. And I can now say, wow, look at that. I can see it reflected. It's given me that the vast open space has given me an opportunity to look within myself because there's no other distraction. There's no other flux, there's no other busyness. And so that what I've gained now feels so valuable that what I've lost doesn't seem so big a deal, doesn't seem so impactful, because I can now see that I've gained so much more than I've lost.
And that's what we hear quite a lot is in terms of being able to slow down, so then you can see better. Because when we the countries that most of us come from, and that's what the conversations have been around, is New Zealand's given everyone the ability to just slow down and actually see things for what they are, instead of seeing or rushing through things at the speed that is expected in the countries where we, where we have migrated from.
It's so true. I often question my path, Hafsa. I question why New Zealand? Out of all the countries in the world, why have I ended up here? And I think New Zealand's gift is that it's a place that allows you to heal. It allows you to heal even what you don't know is broken. And so it does feel like quite a special place.
And I think what you, and this is just my personal experience or opinion, is that Christchurch in particular is a space where those who've decided to stay have fallen in love with the idea of what Christchurch has to offer, plus the kind of people that it has, have all grown up in Christchurch. Not in the sense of grown up, like from a young age to an old age, but intellectually or emotionally grown up in New Zealand.
Richard, yeah, I get it. I totally get that. I can see that. Yes, it does offer you that opportunity if you're willing to take it, right? Like, there is, I don't know how to put this, but I think it's the opportunity is actually contentment, because with this lifestyle in Christchurch is so much ease, ease in getting around, ease in doing things. There's the safety factor. I can't tell you how many times I forget to lock my front door, my garage door at night. And so, yeah, it is a special place. I don't, having been to so many other places in New Zealand, and while I haven't lived there, I'm not sure there's another place with quite this mix. So you've got access to things. There's the opportunity for movement. It's the second largest city, but you don't feel like you're in the thick of things. You definitely don't. Which is lovely if growth is your priority.
Yeah, I think so. Personal growth. I think
Personally.
we need to kind of mention that because I'm not sure about the professional part.
I think things post-COVID, things have definitely shifted. There are a lot more opportunities. Organizations are a lot more willing to include remote workers and into their teams. And so I'm speaking from personal experience here. I've gotten to enjoy working with a Wellington-based, a national office-based team at a national office, a North Island level salary. There are those opportunities coming through. And I can say that that wasn't there before COVID. I think things are shifting. Things are shifting with technology maturation within organizations. I think there'll be more opportunities for us, for sure. At least I'm hopeful. Perpetually hopeful.
It's good to be hopeful. So, if I were to now segue into, like, because we're talking about profession, I think one of the things that I do want to ask, and we hear this quite a lot in the migrant women circles, is around the challenges they've had to face around settling in here into New Zealand, if they are professional women or even just as individuals at a personal level. So what were some of the challenges that you are, well, an invitation to share? Is some of those would you be happy to share?
Definitely, but where to start? I think I should note firstly that when you leave, when you emigrate, from a country and move to a new place, one of the first, the biggest losses is your reputation, professionally speaking. No one tells you that you don't take that with you. You don't take your reputation with you. You kind of have to re-embed yourself, start over with that or create that reputation from scratch. And that was a big knock. It was definitely a big knock on a personal level. Where you have worth, where you had a reputation within an industry where all the work that you've done since uni, since your first job, has counted for something. The minute you don't have that reputation, it felt to me as if I didn't have much in the workplace because all my experience was South African based, so it's with either, Southern African companies, South African companies, or even international global companies. That experience and those titles weren't necessarily understood by people in hiring positions here. And that for me at the time, it meant that I had to start back at the bottom. And it's just that sense of loss that comes with that is immense. It knocks you for the six. You think to yourself, I've spent 12, 15 years in an industry, and all that effort now means very little. It's so devastating. It's so devastating. But you have a choice. You definitely have a choice. You have a choice of whether you want to focus on the past and what you've lost, or if you want to almost baseline where you are now and focus on what you need to put, what fuel you need to put into the engine to move forward. It's almost as if you've got to decide whether you want to have a fixed mindset that's focused on loss or a growth mindset that says, well, there's nothing I can do about the past. This is where I'm at right now. What can I do to move forward? And so I found that my attitude that stemmed from that massive sense of loss was probably my biggest obstacle. The second obstacle, I've had some very interesting conversations. I had a recruiter tell me to use my Dutch ex-husband's last name rather than my Indian Arab-sounding last name. And she said, if you just abbreviate your names, you just go from Sumira and you put Sue, Sue.
Oh,
And
wow.
instead of being Sumira Dawood, why don't you put on your CV Sue van Staden? And then I would be able to get you the interview. And I said, but what happens when I get to the interview and they see I'm brown? And I'm a blonde Afrikaans woman. What happens then? I said, well, at least you can get your foot in the door. And I wouldn't consider that. I wanted my own name, definitely the advice that I got was, well, if you choose to use your own name, you have to understand that finding a job in Christchurch, even with New Zealand experience, is going to be challenging when recruiters are told by their clients not to put forward Indian applicants. True story, but what can you do? I had a, to not get discouraged, I had a rule of thumb. I said, with every 20 applications, I will consider myself successful if I get two interviews out of those 20 applications. And if I use that as my metric of success, then I'm on the right path. Then I'll push on. And I have to be honest, that's what I had to do, as disheartening as it is to get rejection letter after rejection letter, even when you have the experience, you've got the years behind you, they have the qualifications, you've got the New Zealand experience. It can be challenging, but you just have to push on. Somebody will give you a chance. And then it's a boulder going down a hill, right? Once you get that boulder moving, it starts picking up pace. The more experience you get locally, the more confidence you have in yourself, the more you understand local culture, and how to build relationships with people who are local, the easier it becomes. And soon, without knowing it, you've built local networks, clear networks. And you can start being pickier about the work you end up doing. You can start directing and steering the ship towards where you want to go. It definitely gets easier, even though it feels pretty darn hard at the start.
It does. And I think you made a very important point here about, I think if I were to use the term reputational bankruptcy,
That's a good one.
if I think that's the word we want to use, is that you don't bring in your reputation as a profession, in whatever profession you are here, which is actually quite challenging for women who have been who have achieved great careers in their countries and have come here for thinking that this is going to just be another one. That highlights to us that there is, I guess there's just some awareness that needs to be created about this.
In my story, I had a quite a specific catalyst, and I'm so grateful for this. I was working for what I consider minimum wage in very poor conditions for a very small media company, for the local Christchurch business, and it was definitely challenging for all sorts of reasons. And one day, they decided we were a company mainly of women, and they decided to hire another South African male. And this guy had been here for about 10 years and had mainly worked for private companies, larger private companies, and he wanted media experience and was willing to take a salary drop. Anyway, it turns out he got partnered with a few of us so that he could gain a bit of experience. And when it came to the 3 month mark, he had not made the cut. And I remember the day that he was told that he was being let go. The MD came and said, "Oh, would you mind taking him out for coffee, South African to South African, and just, I suppose give him a little bit of advice on how to move forward." And I remember us sitting on a bench having takeaway coffee across from where we worked, and we were looking at the building, and he mentioned how much he was being paid. He was being paid probably 80% more than I was. We were at the same level of seniority. I obviously had been in for 18 months, and he did not make the 3 month cut. I was in such shock that I did something that I never, never do. I shared with him how much I earned, which he pointed out was about 7,000 more than the company intern was earning. I sat there. I'm a chatty person who always has a comeback. I had no words whatsoever. I think in that moment, I very quickly understood that if you don't believe in your worth in this country, no one will believe in your worth. Your worth in monetary terms is what you say it is. You have to back that up, but you determine your value. And I left that 30-minute coffee date. And I was forever changed. I resigned 3 months later. I took a job that could pay me 50% more, and I've been climbing ever since in both salary and seniority. It took a 30-minute conversation to make me understand what my worth was in New Zealand. And I think that's often the missing key when we come to a new country. The systems are different, right? The value system is different. The cultural system is different. And it does take you a minute before you understand what the value system is in the new place that you are in. And once that happens, I find everything else clicks into place. Or at least it did for me.
And I think that's a very valid thing, Sumaira, that we talk about, because that's something not everyone knows. Because when we come into this country, I think often many of us even struggle to get the first job, which is where the loss of confidence kicks in a big time. And women often are pulled between, trying to keep up even the house sorted while they're trying to get themselves professionally set up here, which then puts an extra pressure on the woman in terms of trying to
That
navigate
is
that in this.
so true. I mean, I left a country where I had a my kids were in schools, and I had a domestic worker. I'm not sure if that term is used here, but I had someone to cook and clean, and I'd come home with the children. She would take them by the hand, bath them, get them ready for bed, give them a nighttime massage. I could just sweep in and do bedtime stories. It was fantastic. You have a helper. You have somebody to help you. Even though you're supervising, you have somebody to help you with all those domestic duties. And then when you come here, all of that is on you as well. There's such immense pressure on us as women to suddenly do everything. If you've come from a country where that's not the setup. It's a lot, eh? It's a lot. I used to look at women mowing the lawns. You drive across the street and you see a woman seriously mowing a lawn, and you think to yourself, oh, I always thought to myself, but I'm a lady. I don't want to take out the bins. I don't want to mow the lawns. And then you realize that actually the division of labor here is so different. Everybody's got to chip in whether they consider that their gender role or not. You've just got to. It does change the dynamic of your relationship, get to a place where there's more to do, where you've got to do more jobs, you wear more hats.
I think that's one of the other things that people need to understand is when they come here. And that also kind of leads to some tensions, I think, in some families, is around the sharing of the jobs, because now there is no helpers out there to help you with the work at home. And I've heard a few conversations where this becomes a point of tension.
Of tension, massive tension, because you—it's so easy to live as ships in the night passing each other, right? Because if I want to say go into the city or do something, have a cup of coffee, somebody's got to look after the kids at home. You don't have that support at home. You don't have that family structure to support you. You're not living intergenerationally anymore. You're living on your own, and so if you're going out, your partner's looking after the kids. If your partner's going out, you're with the kids. And so there are also relationship dynamic shifts happening that you're not even aware of. It's just survival at that point, right? It's so interesting. I am at I have a younger group of friends, like I sub two South African friends. We're a group of three, and they I'm a Gen X and they're Gen Zs, millennials, sorry. And they don't necessarily take on that role of needing to do everything and be everything for the family. They've made other choices. They've, for example, both of them don't cook and they leave it to their partners to cook. And I found that quite interesting because my knee-jerk reaction is to, oh my God, I've got to do everything. I've got to be this. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I've got to, tick everything off my list. And here are two other women who've suffered the same reputational bankruptcy. I think that's the term you used. Quite lovely. But who have made other choices, who have more equitable relationships in terms of divisions of labor. So I think I do find it quite interesting that generationally there are shifts as well.
Yeah, true, very true.
Gives me hope. Gives me hope. What can I learn from that?
I think there is a lot to learn, isn't it? And yeah, that's something that is a little bit hard, I think, for depending on where you are in terms of in terms of how you are in your life journey around that. I don't think all women, especially those who have moved forward in their life a little bit more than you and I have, can have that conversation now because the expectations have already been set.
Yeah, true, so true.
And that then makes it very hard for these women to then have that equitable distribution of workload at home.
That's true. I mean, make no, there's no joke about it, but I suppose the bulk of the survival tasks, if I can call it that, do fall on our shoulders. They do. We need make sure that everybody's belted on the bus and everybody's semi-happy and semi-adjusted and get food on the table, go to work, come back, and still try to squeeze in our personal goals as well. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot to shoulder. A lot to shoulder. It's so funny. It's so easy to say, oh, it's inequitable and it's a negative thing, but I'm just so in awe of women and the ability just to when there's need to show up and do the work. I'm just in awe of us as, organisms who are able, who have that capacity, even though we shouldn't have to. I just, yeah, I find it beautiful in a way.
True. It is beautiful, isn't it? What we can
Yeah.
carry sometimes.
It is. It's a double-edged sword, but it's beautiful. What's the phrase? Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, true, very true. I guess there's also an opportunity there in terms of how we can guide our women around this conversation, or this, just having that mindset shift around how to navigate this if they are going through that. It's going to be yeah, I think that needs a whole new podcast.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So I'm just mindful of how much time we have left in our conversation. So I think now I want to move towards this question around belonging. And I know you've briefly mentioned it in terms of how New Zealand offered you an opportunity, a change, and space to grow. Does that mean that New Zealand is a place where you feel that you belong?
That's a big question. Yes and no. I don't feel from a belonging sense that New Zealand was as warm as what I expected. And so I don't think it received me as openly as I thought it would. I had quite a few in the first 2 years that I got here, I had quite a few incidents that were racially charged, like spontaneous things shouted at me, and it's very bizarre. Because I'd never, even having grown up in apartheid South Africa, I haven't quite experienced that degree of hate. And so what I kept doing for the first few years that I was here, I kept being vigilant and looking for reasons why I couldn't belong here, why I didn't belong here, why I stood out, why I didn't feel like people understood my value. And it actually took, I started researching, like just reading up as much as I could on what it meant to belong. And it's twofold from where I stand, right? It's twofold, but you have to want to belong, firstly. So you have to be a willing participant in this game of belonging. And then secondly, instead of, and I credit Brené Brown here, instead of looking for evidence that you don't belong, you need to do the opposite. You need to look for evidence that you do belong. And once you do that, it flips everything. Suddenly you need belonging from other people less. And it becomes more about the choice of do I want to belong here? Is this my home?
Do you think belonging is a psychological state of mind then?
Yes, definitely. Or should I say largely? Because I do feel that as human beings, we do need that reassurance. We do need that mutual need where I want to belong here, but you also need me to belong here. I think we need that mutual need. But largely, it's a frame of mind of, and the context is, I can belong here. It's almost as if it's a personal permission. Because think of it, Hafsa, I'm a citizen. On paper, I belong in New Zealand. But living here with a sense of belong is very different to being a citizen. And as part of your evidence that you belong, you need to include the ways that you contribute to the society. Once you feel like you're giving and taking, there's no question of whether you can belong here or not, because then you simply belong, but you're doing it on your own terms. And that is a very powerful place. It's a very powerful context to have.
That is a very I guess it's deep, it's philosophical, plus it's also physicality is also part of it, isn't it? Because belonging here would mean that you are, like you said, you're a citizen, so then it allows you to be here. But then, like you said, it is about that state of mind as well.
100%. And I don't want to, undervalue that citizenship, that sense of relief that you feel when no one can kick you out, where you have a stable home, that's not going to be ripped up from under you. I remember thinking when we came here on a work visa and we worked through a work visa to residency to permanent residency to citizenship. And I remember before getting citizenship, having the sense of, I call it like latent anxiety around what if something happens and we are deported back? Or were you forced? Do we have no control over staying here? And it's like you've wrapped up your life in South Africa. This now is your only life, right? And if you don't have full control over that experience, it can be quite daunting. And so having citizenship is just so important. For me personally, I needed that safety and security.
Yeah, because it goes back to the basics of food, shelter, and clothing, isn't it? We're starting there, and then we go into the whole next level of what belonging looks like at the next level. So, I guess from that perspective, then I do have another follow-up question about when we say we are looking for belonging. The next question is around acceptance for me, which is mostly about whether you have felt or you feel that you are accepted here, and what does that look like for you?
Another big one. I see that as very separate. I can say this now because I have a stronger foundation in myself, but I see acceptance as very different to belonging. Both matter, but to me, I've made belonging matter more than acceptance. Acceptance is fickle. Acceptance can change, that can shift. That is based on external forces. Belonging, I've now realized I can control. I can shape. I can decide what that looks like for me. And I've widened belonging. I've blown that up and made that bigger so that acceptance, whether I have it or not, isn't so pivotal. And sometimes acceptance for me could be one person being warm. A stranger, a local being warm to you or receptive to you, that can feel like acceptance. It's the lady when you go for an Aquafit class, the other participant in the class saying, "Oh, this is your first class, come again." We'd love to see you. That for me is ex it's as simple as that. I've made sure that for myself, acceptance doesn't mean more than that. Because if I give it too much importance, it could shake me. And I need a stable base. I've actually gotten to a point now where I think that I don't just have one home. Home isn't one place. I can't define it as one place. And because I can't define it as one place, like home for me is still South Africa, but it's definitely New Zealand. And then on a spiritual, esoteric level, it's India. Right? I have an Indian soul. Like it's steeped in all other kinds of things. And so home for me are three places. And so if home and belonging is linked to three places, acceptance cannot mean what it normally means. And so acceptance is almost more mundane. It's smaller. It's going to an op shop, paying and making chit chat with a front desk, and walking out and feeling good, feeling accepted. It's as simple as that, because that is transferable.
So amongst the conversations, you did mention about home. So I just want to ask, you said South Africa and India are both home. And what about New Zealand now?
Oh, so three homes in South Africa, India, and New Zealand. Yeah, no, New
Right.
Zealand is definitely home. It's probably shifted into my core base because I can understand the value of that wide open space. It allows me to be who I am now. And so while I love South Africa and it has its moments, I am no longer that person that left. It's not my core home, but it's still home. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. To me, it does. I'm not sure if if anybody else listening, it would make sense, or they might have similar experiences. You never know, because then it is about. Is that what you would say to someone who is planning to come to New Zealand about what New Zealand feels like or makes you into?
I'm so scared of sharing my viewpoint on that. I hate to jade or m make murky somebody else's experience, right? Like I would like them to come here and then once they're here, we can talk about the experience. But I guess I could only speak from my own personal point of view. Yes, I suppose for me, I'd describe New Zealand as like a piece of clay. It can be what you want it to be, right? If you want the busyness, you can move to Auckland and have a corporate busy life. You could move south and you could have a peaceful, more zen life steeped in nature. You could move to Wellington and have that melting pot of cultures and, have quite a buzzing social life. I mean, you can take from it what you want, actually. But I do feel like that vastness in its landscape offers such a unique opportunity to just really go deep within yourself and really take all the floating pieces of yourself and just make it whole and distill that into something that's purer, right? Or at least that's been my experience, where it's allowed me to take very vast experiences and actually sit still in a place where you can piece it all together. I have to be honest, when I did the first part of the ethnic leadership course, that while I had done so much work on myself before, that was the first time where I'd done those exercises in those sequence and I could actually see the different parts. Yeah. Coming back to your question, I guess I would describe New Zealand as an opportunity for reflection. It's so linked to its landscapes. You just, if you're moving to the south, you just can't separate it. It's part of the experience, it's part of the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I guess if that is how somebody gets their meaning, or if that's what they need at that stage in their life, then it's a fantastic opportunity. But it depends on that person, right? To think that people who choose to come to New Zealand are looking for that something.
Yeah, I think some of us do get into a bit of a shock with the amount of people that you find here, because we come from such cities, and like you pointed out about the vastness of space, it is metaphorical and physical, I feel.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, it was lovely talking to you, Samira. I think that was a wonderful and a very deep conversation. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.